On Saturday, an assailant opened fire at a Dollar General store in Jacksonville, Florida, shooting and killing three black customers before taking his own life. The perpetrator was a white male in his 20s who came to the scene wearing tactical gear and carrying an AR-15-style rifle and a handgun. Authorities say he left behind documents detailing the racist motivation for the killings. Here's Jacksonville Sheriff T.K. Waters speaking at a press conference.
The Clay County Sheriff's Office, who has been assisting our agency with this investigation, received information after the shooting that the shooter had authored several manifestos, one to his parents, one to the media, and one to federal agents. Portions of these manifestos detailed the shooter's disgusting ideology of hate. Plainly put, this shooting was racially motivated, and he hated black people. I want to be very clear that there is absolutely no evidence that the shooter is part of any large group. We know that he acted completely alone. This is a dark day in Jacksonville's history. Any loss of life is tragic, but the hate that motivated the shooter's killing spree adds an additional layer of heartbreak. There's no place for hate in our community, and this is not Jacksonville.
The authorities say the gunman acted alone. The shooting is part of a broader movement of extremist violence that's taken hold around the country and the world over the last decade. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How did you feel when you heard the news out of Jacksonville this weekend? What kind of action would you like to see the government take when it comes to hate crimes and extremist acts of violence? Do you have questions about extremist movements in the United States? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Heidi Byrick is the co-founder and chief strategy officer of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. Heidi, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We heard Sheriff Waters there making a point saying that the Jacksonville shooter acted alone, which is technically true. But as someone who studies the white supremacist movement, how people influence each other online, what is your reaction to that?
Well, it's clear he took the act on his own. What we don't know, but can probably speculate, is that he was reading, you know, racist material, hateful material, which is all over the web and which has inspired so many mass killings recently. People will remember the shooting at a grocery store in Buffalo last year, but also there was the recent incident where a man murdered a woman who put a pride flag in front of her shop in California, and he had a bunch of hateful material on his Twitter feed. This is probably the process that happened here, that somebody was radicalized into hate and then decided to do this. I think it's also interesting that in this case in Jacksonville, the assailant was wearing a Rhodesia patch, referring to the white-run government in Africa during colonial times, the same patch that Dylan Roof, the shooter in Charleston in 2015, was wearing. So he was clearly aware of the currents in the white supremacist world.
I've seen some analysts point toward that, like there's a performative nature here where people have seen other people write manifestos and they do it, in this case, want to make sure that other people see it. The act of violence is part of it, but it seems like this performance of getting the public's attention is part of the goal here.
Yeah, that is definitely the case. Manifestos play on each other, and each new shooter with their manifesto builds on the last one. That happened with the Buffalo shooter, whose manifesto was very similar to the man who killed more than 50 people in mosques in New Zealand a few years ago. Frankly, I'm glad that this manifesto never made its way onto the internet and therefore wasn't seen by other people who might be radicalized or want to one-up this shooting. These manifestos are extremely dangerous.
Your organization, the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, put out a statement about the shooting saying, quote, "We demand that politicians and tech companies take action now." Now, you just mentioned the manifesto is not going online. What would you like to see from social media companies, search providers, and others that might help stop the flow of this kind of the kind of inspiration that might lead someone to an act like this?
Yeah, there is a lot that still needs to be done on online systems. You know, Facebook probably has the best policies that they're enforcing right now in terms of the mainstream platforms, but you still find hate and extremism on there that isn't caught by their AI systems. Twitter, or X now, unfortunately, seems to have completely given up with content moderation And there's all kinds of hate and extremism on the site, from neo-Nazi material to misogynistic material. These things should not be on these platforms. But we also face something else, which there are large sections of the web that are completely unregulated now, places like Telegram or 4chan, where you can't stop this extremism from spreading and indoctrinating others. And that's a very unfortunate aspect of where we are right now.
Talking to Heidi Byrick with the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism about this weekend's shooting targeting Black people in Jacksonville, Florida, and wider concerns about extremist violence, racist violence. You can join in with your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Rod is with us in La Crosse. Rod, hello.
Hello. Army discharged USMC in 77. Now, what really bothers me is that security guard at that college, I don't see why he didn't sit there and jump in a vehicle and follow him, seeing he knows that he put on a flak jacket, put on a mask. That just kind of amazes me that, I mean, I'm a Marine. I would have followed him, no doubt about it. No matter what they said, I had to stay there. But I would have followed him because I knew he was up to no good.
Rod, thanks for the call. Rod, referring to the security guard at a local Black college who had turned away the perpetrator. Are there things, this is at a much more up-close level, Heidi, are there things in the old, if you see something, say something vein that could also help prevent acts like this?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I don't want to second guess what happened here, but I do know that the college security folks did notify authorities after the incident. Perhaps that wasn't enough, but, you know, we can't blame them when somebody decides to do something like this. But you do... It is very important that if you see something weird that you let people know, because perhaps you can intervene. And actually the security, we don't know yet, but maybe ended up protecting the students on the college, but unfortunately not the folks who were shot at the Dollar General.
Thanks for the call, Rod, at 800-642-1234. A high profile event, excuse me, like this gets our attention now. Do we see trends over time, Heidi? Do we see the problem with particular kinds of extremist violence getting worse over the years?
Yes. In the last 5 to 7 years, there is no question that white supremacist domestic terrorism has been growing and is the number one domestic terrorism threat in this country. And that's not me saying that. The FBI has said that, the DHS has said that, the National Counterterrorism Center has said that. The federal government understands that this is the biggest threat. And of course, it's very different than, say, 20 years ago when Islamic extremism was the thing that we were focused on. So this is what the government needs to be working on and paying attention to. And as far as we can tell from testimony by the FBI director, they have put more resources towards this type of violence in recent years than they had, say, you know, 8-9 years ago.
We're talking to Heidi Byrick, co-founder and chief strategy officer of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, looking at the shooting targeting Black people in Jacksonville last week, wider concerns about extremist violence. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about that rise in white supremacist ideology and extremist violence in the U.S.? Do you have questions about how this works? Who is inspiring who? Join in at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered this kind of hateful stuff, maybe even inciting material, online? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Heidi Byrick from the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, looking at the racially motivated Jacksonville shooting over the weekend, how it connects to the broader extremist movement and racist violence elsewhere. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on how the media covers these kind of incidents? What do you think the government, if anything, should be doing to stop the tide of rising extremism? How about technology companies? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Chris is with us in Menominee. Chris, hi.
Hi. So I recently have come across something online which I found extremely disturbing. And I'm maybe looking for what is the right way to report something like this. I tried making a call to the FBI field office here in Wisconsin and was put on hold for 2 hours and eventually left a message. How do I actually get this information to the right person to maybe get a look at some of this?
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Chris, seeing what he saw as potentially dangerous postings on the internet, Heidi, is there a right way to draw someone's attention to that? If so, who?
Well, I hate to hear that you were put on hold for 2 hours. It seems unacceptable. That is exactly what you should do, which is alert the FBI. And I would also encourage people to report it to the tech companies. They're all of them, the mainstream ones at least, have reporting systems, and let them know that you've seen something problematic. But it is law enforcement that you're supposed to get in touch with. So your caller did the right thing.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Willem joins us now in Colfax. Willem, hi.
Hi. I've seen some sort of disturbing signs that I don't remember seeing in the past that have to do with politics. And like there's a neighbor or a non-neighbor's person in Colfax that has a sign that says lock and load, things are going to get nasty. And then claiming that, you know, the current president is a security threat to our nation and wake up America and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I think I know where that message is coming from. I find it disturbing that someone is suggesting that maybe there's going to be violence over.
Willem, thanks for the call. A lot of background noise in your call, but I think we get the gist. Heidi, Willem seeing what he sees as violent rhetoric now just on, you know, yard signs in his community.
Yeah, I mean, he is tapping into an increasing problem, which is rising political violence in this country. And if you look at polls, you find more and more people, this is particularly on the right end of the political spectrum, who are willing to use violence. And this kind of, you know, and we've had attacks, right? Nancy Pelosi's husband was attacked. Brett Kavanaugh had someone try to assault him in his home. Election officials in particular across this country have been seeing threats like they've never seen before. A lot of that driven by people who believe, you know, who are election deniers, who believe that Trump had his election stolen from him. This is a really serious situation, especially when you're talking about county and local folks who are just trying to do their jobs. And some of them have had to go into hiding at times, in particular two election workers here in Georgia that Trump targeted. So it's a bit scary and a very serious situation. And I sure hope the authorities are prepared for maybe some tumult around the 2024 elections.
Thanks for the call, Willem. Dick joins us now in Brooklyn, Wisconsin's Brooklyn. Dick, hello.
Hi. What I'd like to say is one of the things that concerns me is the fact that we have politicians who are exalting this type of behavior. And even though they might have conservative political views, there are other candidates who also have conservative political views who aren't backing that type of thing. Yet the right seems to be exalting those candidates that support this type of violence.
Dick, thanks for the call. Heidi, political leaders, political speakers, what would you hope to hear and see from them?
What I would really like to hear, especially from folks on the right, is denunciations absolutely clear about any kind of violent rhetoric. That would be so helpful to making things better in this country. You know, from my perspective, political leaders have a responsibility to be on the right side of things. And it would be really nice if we could see, say, for example, everybody who's running on the GOP ticket say, there will be no violence, there will be no violent rhetoric, we are not going to have this at the polls or in the election process. It would be a really wonderful thing to see. And it's a responsibility and one that they should bear.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Heidi Byrick with the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism about the weekend's shooting in Jacksonville. Other worries about extremist and racist violence. Heidi, I don't want to get through this conversation without talking about the factor of race. We heard the sheriff earlier being very explicit. The manifesto was unambiguous. This was a racist, a racially targeted shooting. How much do we worry about that as the center of motivation for extremist violence?
Well, it's a serious motivation, right? It's one of the oldest hateful motivations in the United States, going all the way back to when the Klan was formed after the Civil War and was the first domestic terrorist organization in the United States. We've had the shooting at the Buffalo supermarket, the Charleston church, and others. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that pretty much all people of color and Jews have been targeted by this kind of violence, whether it's a synagogue in Pittsburgh or an El Paso Walmart. We have just had way too much domestic terrorism, and also at times targeting women specifically. There was a massacre of women by an extremely misogynistic guy in, I think, 2014 in Santa Barbara, California. We're just having domestic terrorism that's out of control, that's being driven by hate and bigotry.
Heidi, we've talked about technology companies, some about things that politicians can do. What other solutions are out there that would make you feel, you know, more hopeful that we could bring these trends down in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I can't understress the issue of the online space. I just don't believe that we would have the kind of problems that we're having today if this stuff wasn't proliferating out there. I mean, in the 1990s, how would you find this kind of hateful material? How would you find a Klan group? It's not in the phone book. So it's a seismic issue. But I think there are a lot of things that can happen. One is law enforcement stepping up and also being, you know, schooled on who these groups are, what they're up to, what they're doing, what they believe. That is one aspect of protecting the public. I also think that when communities stand up, as they have in Jacksonville in such horrendous circumstances, that it does have an effect on preaching love instead of preaching hate. So it's sort of a whole of society issue to beat back these terrible ideas and make it clear that they are unacceptable in polite society, in any society.
Heidi, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
I really appreciate you all having me on.
That's Heidi Byrick, co-founder and chief strategy officer of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. We've been talking about Saturday's shooting in Jacksonville, Florida, what it says about extremism and violence in the United States today.